I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Ballot Talks on Radio Times. Things got pretty ugly in Las Vegas last Saturday night at the Democratic State Convention when some Bernie Sanders supporters threw chairs and threatened the chairwoman with abusive messages, including death threats. Senator Sanders condemned the violence and also accused the party in Nevada of preventing a fair and transparent process. It's been a long campaign for the Democratic presidential nomination. And while Hillary Clinton has gotten the most votes and leads in the delegate count, Bernie Sanders has had some big wins of late and enjoys enthusiastic support from his voters. He's gotten about 45% of the vote. Here he is after his victory in Oregon on Tuesday night.
And by the way, I should tell you that there are a lot of people out there, many of the pundits and politicians, they say Bernie Sanders should drop out. The people of California should not have the right to determine who the next president will be. Well, let me be as clear as I can be. I agree with you. We are in to the last ballot is cast.
We asked Laura Meckler to join us. She's a national politics reporter for The Wall Street Journal. She's been covering the Democrats in this presidential contest. This is her third straight presidential race for The Wall Street Journal. Laura, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here.
So what happened on Saturday night that made some of these Bernie Sanders supporters so angry?
Well, this gets down to the sort of arcane rules of that the state has and other states have as well, choosing delegates to the national convention. Nevada has a caucus system rather than a primary. A primary is very straightforward. You vote, and they allocate the delegates based on the vote. In this case, it happens through a series of conventions. First, you have a precinct-level meetings, then county conventions, and state conventions. This is the state convention. And what had happened was, essentially, the state party said that some of the people that the Sanders people had put up to be delegates to the national convention were not, in fact, eligible, or to be delegates to the state convention were not actually eligible, and so, therefore, their votes would not count. It's a complicated system. It's hard to explain. At the county level, the Sanders people had actually outmaneuvered the Clinton people in similar fashion and had swung the vote more into his favor. As you may remember, she actually won the caucuses the day of the caucuses, but after the county level, he was ahead. And then at the state level, she was ahead again. We're talking about the difference of maybe two delegates here. At the middle of it all, the Sanders people got very angry that the state party felt that they were not being treated fairly, started yelling, screaming. Somebody lifted a chair, looked like he was going to throw it. I was not there, but this is based on accounts of people who were. And they had to shut the whole thing down. And afterwards, there was some nastiness on the part of Sanders supporters, leaving very mean and terrible messages on the voicemail of the state party chair. And it's just the whole thing kind of has descended into chaos.
Well, and the party chairwoman named Roberta Lang, now she filed a complaint with the DNC, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Because of the messages left on her machine, I guess, or...
I think that's right. Essentially, both parties have appealed to the DNC to try to, you know, press their cases. It's just really very ugly, I think, is the bottom line here.
Well, and I think even to add to it is some of the Bernie Sanders supporters and even some of his surrogates feel that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who's the head of the DNC, is really a closet Clinton supporter, mm-hmm. and feels as if the party is against them.
Exactly. So they have a sort of a litany of complaints. Some of them are perhaps more valid than others, but among them, they feel like Debbie Wasserman Schultz set the debate schedule to favor Hillary Clinton by not setting very many debates initially and by scheduling some of them at Saturday nights or a Sunday before a holiday when viewership would be low. They felt that was an effort to protect Clinton. They were upset with her for a controversy over when there was a data breach. The Sanders people looked at the voter files that belonged to Clinton, which was absolutely the wrong thing to do. But then perhaps they felt that Wasserman Schultz overreacted by cutting him off from his own data, cutting him off from the system while the issue was resolved. They were mad at her for some of the people that she appointed to some of the standing committees at the convention. There are Clinton supporters who are co-chairs of each of the Rules Committee and the Platform Committee at the convention. So they just think that she essentially has her thumb or maybe her whole hand on the scale for Clinton.
And do you think this is a kind of a ripple in what has turned out to be probably a longer campaign than Hillary Clinton thought it was going to be? Or does this show a deeper fissure within the Democratic Party because of these two candidates?
I think it's a little bit of both, truthfully. I think that Sanders has shown that he has enormous support and a lot of people who are, you know, even this late in the game when, as you said at the top, you know, the math shows that, you know, Clinton is ahead. And frankly, you know, barring something very unexpected, it's really hard to see how Sanders catches up. She is winning this race. But despite that, he still has this enormous amount of support, people who really are still behind him and think he should be the nominee. So I think that that shows that, you know, there are a lot of people not ready to rally behind her and who are very drawn to his message, which is a much purer message, a message call for a political revolution. On the other hand, I think it's important to realize that we're in the midst of it still, and we don't yet know how this is going to resolve. I mean, in one of the clips he played, he said he was in it until the last ballot is cast. I think one of the questions we have is does he mean the last ballot in the primary contest, like when the voters are done, which will be June 14th when the District of Columbia votes, or does he mean the superdelegates voting at the convention itself? And there's a big difference between those. You know, Hillary Clinton herself stayed in the race in 2008 until the last voters cast their ballots. And, you know, I think that because of that and other reasons, they've been very careful not to look like they're trying to push him out of the race. I mean, Sanders stood up there. It was a little bit of a straw man saying, they want me out of the race. Well, certainly the Clinton campaign has not said that. There may be other Democrats who do. They would like him to sort of maybe tone it down a little bit, but they are trying to make it clear he can stay in. But the question is, what happens after that?
Yeah.
You know, if he's still behind, does he then sort of have a unification moment and try to bring the party together? Or does he stick with it to the convention, which some of his advisors have said that he plans to do? And if he sticks with it to the convention and they're still fighting over this in Philadelphia, you're right there.
Right there, where we are.
Right where you are. You know, that will make things more interesting for the Philadelphia convention, but it also might make it harder for the party to unify for the fall. So those are the stakes. And it's not yet clear to me, despite what's being said now, whether Sanders will really take it all the way. It's very possible that when the voting is over, he'll stop, assess. And if he is still behind and if the superdelegates have not swung behind him, maybe he will decide it's a time for unification, but we don't know that.
No, we don't. And we'll be talking more about that a little bit later on the show with our other two guests. But Laura, it's interesting to go back to 2008 when Hillary Clinton was running against Barack Obama. She waited till the end. She even won California, if my memory serves me well, sort of the way Bernie Sanders has been winning of late.
Mm-hmm. That's right. There are some definite parallels between 2008 and 2016. And it's interesting because Hillary Clinton herself addressed that at a recent, I think it was a town hall, a televised town hall meeting, where she was asked about the race. And she made an analogy to that. And then she said, there was no uncertainty what she meant. She said, once she lost, she got behind Barack Obama. And it was clear that she expects him to do the same for her. You know, we'll see. But yes, that's absolutely what happened. You know, Barack Obama had a rough May.
Yes, he did. I remember that very well. And he lost really badly here in Pennsylvania in the primary.
Yes.
Now, Bernie Sanders won big in Oregon. I think that was expected. Do we have, Laura, the results of the Kentucky? Has that been called? I know there was about 2,000 or maybe less than 2,000 votes separating the two candidates.
I don't know if the Associated Press has called it yet, which is sort of the gold standard for this. There, at least one network has called it for her. I think she is still ahead. There just were a handful of precincts outstanding. I haven't checked this morning yet to see if it's changed, but I don't know if it's officially been called. I mean, I think that it's very unlikely that he will get over her total. It is possible. Of course, from a delegate point of view, it's kind of meaningless because when the way Democrats apportion the delegates, it's proportionally. So they're each going to get roughly half of the delegates available. There is a you know, of course, a moral victory piece of it, but nice to say that you've won the state. But from a practical point of view, the reason you don't see, you know, calls for recounts and that sort of thing is that it just doesn't matter that much in terms of actual delegates.
Well, one of the things that we're learning about from this race is just how the primary or caucus process works, or in some cases perhaps doesn't work, and how states and parties in states really control this process.
Right. It is amazing how the rules differ. I mean, keep in mind the system has, you know, grown up organically from a time when, you know, party leaders in the states essentially decided how the delegates would be voting at the national convention, and there of course was a move to more democracy to get the power out of the elites. Then a move back by accretion of these superdelegates who wanted to retake some of that control. But each state sets its own rules, so you have some states that are very straightforward. A primary like Pennsylvania, you know, people vote. They allocate the delegates that go to the convention. You know, it's not that complicated. I mean, there is some maneuvering around who the delegates are going to be, but still, it's fairly straightforward. These caucus systems are just Byzantine, frankly. You know, you have to, first of all, you know, you have to show up at the time of the caucus. If you can't be there, you can't vote. You sometimes have to say publicly who you're voting for, which is, you know, different than what most people have come to think of about voting. And then they have this process where it goes up through the conventions and you opens the door to Nevada. I think to what we saw in Nevada, Republicans have also had some crazy situations of maneuvering to try to get extra delegates at the conventions that they host. So it really is a bizarre process, and it doesn't really matter a whole lot when you have a clear winner, but when you have a close race, then people start focusing on all this.
Laura, about a minute before I have to say goodbye to you, I mean, do you think there will be calls and even efforts to change some of this process going forward, or is that something you think the Democrats will debate about here in Philadelphia in July?
Both. I think there will be calls to change it, and I think they will debate about it in July. It's not clear whether the committees of the convention have the power to make changes, but I think that it will be. That's usually something done between presidential races. I think that there will be a lot of discussion about that for sure. Now, whether everybody agrees on what the changes that should be made is another story, but I absolutely think it'll be on the table.
And when is California? When is that primary?
It is June 7th.
On June 7th. And is that the big prize, so to speak, waiting?
Yes, that is a big prize. Although New Jersey also votes on June 7th, so that's another big state. Then we also have Montana, New Mexico, North Dakota, and South Dakota. So they will finish. Well, then a week later, the District of Columbia, where I am, will finish it out. But the June 7th is the last big day of voting.
Well, Laura, thanks so much for joining us today and getting our conversation started.
Great. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And that's Laura Meckler, a national politics reporter for The Wall Street Journal. And we are talking about the Democrats in this hour of Radio Times. Disorder among the Democrats, if I can put it that way. We have two guests who will be joining us. Jonathan Tessini, who is a surrogate for Bernie Sanders, and Governor Ed Rendell, a supporter of Hillary Clinton. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Ballot Talks on Radio Times. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen, and we're talking about some of the growing tensions in the Democratic presidential race between the supporters of Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders and how it might impact the general election or the convention coming up this summer here in Philadelphia. And joining us now is Ed Rendell, former two-term Pennsylvania governor and mayor of Philadelphia. He's a news analyst for MSNBC, or for NBC, a special counsel for Ballard Spahr, a law firm here in Philadelphia. He's a superdelegate and former chairman of the DNC. And Governor Rendell, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
My pleasure, Marty.
Also with us is Jonathan Tessini. He's a political and labor strategist, a surrogate for Bernie Sanders, wrote a book called The Essential Bernie Sanders and His Vision for America. And Jonathan Tessini, nice to have you with us on Ballot Talks on Radio Times as well.
It's great to be here with you, Ed.
Fair enough. And let me give out the phone number to our listeners, and it's 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join the conversation. Governor, I have to begin with something that you said in the Washington Post. It's gotten a lot of play. You were talking about Donald Trump, his possible appeal in Bucks County outside of Philadelphia, and you told the Washington Post, will he have some appeal to working class Democrats in Levittown or Bristol? Sure. For every one, he'll lose one and a half or two Republican women. Trump's comments like, you can't be a 10 if you're flat-chested, that will come back to haunt him. Then you said, Governor, there are probably more ugly women in America than attractive women. People take that stuff personally. I think a lot of women take your comment personally.
Well, you got it wrong, Marty. I said that in reference to the comments he made about Carly Fiorina. And as I said last night, my terminology was stupid and incredibly insensitive, and I apologize to anybody who was offended by it. The point I was making is when he attacked Carly Fiorina's looks, that there are far more Americans, both male and female, who are sensitive about their looks, and it's a dangerous thing to start attacking people for the way they look.
So when you said there, I don't want to spend the whole hour on this, I promise you, but when you said there,
we were on to talk about...
I just want to understand this, because I think this is going to be used by Republicans, perhaps against your candidate.
Compared to what Donald Trump has said, I don't think there's a problem.
But when you said that there are probably more ugly women in America than attractive women, you were quoting Donald Trump?
Well, I was pivoting off what he had said about Carly Fiorina. But look, I apologize for it. It was stupid. It was insensitive. I shouldn't have said it. I used a poor terminology to get my point across, and I made a mistake. So let's try to move on and talk about what we were supposed to talk about.
Absolutely, and I do want to move on. Let me get you, Jonathan Tessini, into the conversation here. Is Bernie Sanders, does he have a chance to become the Democratic nominee for president this year?
Yes, I think he does. And I think Bernie and every person who supports him understands that that option, that opportunity, that chance is a very narrow path. I don't think he's made any bones about that. He's been very clear to his supporters. We have to win a very, very large share of the remaining delegates. Your previous guest from the Wall Street Journal mentioned the upcoming contest in California, New Jersey, June 7th. You know, that's going to have to happen. And then we have to then go to the convention and potentially make a argument to the so-called superdelegates. It's important to note that neither Hillary Clinton nor Bernie Sanders will clinch the nomination based on pledged delegates at this point. It will be decided by the superdelegates.
Well, one of the superdelegates is with us, Governor Ed Randell. What do you think of that strategy, Governor?
I can make my pitch to him right here on the radio, huh?
Well, let me make it for you.
I'm just kidding.
No, fair enough. Let me turn back to you, Governor Randell. There is a lot of commentary about the role of delegates and superdelegates. You are a superdelegate. Is there a chance in Philadelphia in July that superdelegates would change their mind, especially if Bernie Sanders were to say, let's win California, and say perhaps he's our winning ticket in the fall?
Well, look, there's always a chance. And the funny part about all this is we superdelegates, Bernie didn't like us very much in February. Now he loves us in May. But the answer is, look, those are the rules. I'm not so sure we should have superdelegates, but those are the rules. And by the way, if we didn't have superdelegates, Hillary Clinton would have clinched the nomination way before we got to Philadelphia, because she'll easily get more than 50% of the elected delegates. But having said that, Bernie has every right under the rules and his forces to try to persuade superdelegates that he's the best choice to win. In fact, I have to laugh a little bit here at Jonathan, because in 2008, we made sort of the same argument to the superdelegates, we being the Clinton forces, mm-hmm. because Hillary won in 8 out of the last 11 contests, as you recall, Marty.
I do.
Texas, Ohio, Pennsylvania, ton of large states. And Hillary wound up with slightly more popular vote than Senator Obama. So we made the argument to the superdelegates, but we lost out. And the weakness of the argument is, number one, Hillary Clinton not only is going to win the battle for elected pledged delegates, but she's going to win the battle of popular vote by more than 3 million. And number two, the argument that somehow Bernie Sanders will be a stronger candidate because he runs ahead of Hillary against Trump and against other Republican candidates. Well, that's because Bernie has never taken a significantly hard negative ad yet, and Hillary's been on the receiving end for 23 years. If Bernie takes a month's worth of negative ads, my guess is those poll numbers wouldn't be the same. And the superdelegates are relatively sophisticated, and I think they'll understand that. But look, the Sanders people have every right to fight this to the end. They have every right to make their case to the superdelegates, and we'll see what happens.
Well, Jonathan Tessini, let me go back to you. And I've raised this before when talking about the Democrats and certainly Senator Sanders running for the nomination. Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat. He's running as a Democrat in the Democratic Party, and yet he seems to have problems with the rules in that party. Is he trying to have it both ways?
Well, let me just first address a couple of things that the governor said. First of all, I appreciate very much that he, as a leading Democrat, says and underscores that Bernie has the right to go all the way to the convention and make the case to the superdelegates. It's not necessarily been the case from all Democrats, so I think he should be commended for that. I will say that we shouldn't just gloss over the fact that if Hillary Clinton becomes the nominee, we are essentially putting before the voters a very, very damaged candidate with very, very, very high negative ratings among the populace. And that's not just something that has come about over the last year. She's been quite unpopular for a whole host of reasons we can discuss. And I think we run a great risk at losing the White House if Hillary Clinton faces Donald Trump. And about Bernie Sanders, respectfully, he has been vetted. He has faced a lot of attacks over the last past year. And what he benefits from, and I think it is different from at least what the polls are showing regarding Secretary Clinton, is I think even people who disagree with Bernie think he's probably one of the most authentic people in politics right now. And when he speaks, people believe that he's saying what he thinks, and they don't think that about Secretary Clinton. And when you are the recipient of a barrage of negative advertising, which clearly will happen if he's the nominee, it will come from the Republicans, and I can anticipate what some of that will say. One of the things that you can do to counter that, and one of the most effective things you can do to counter that, and your effectiveness at countering that, is to be authentic. And for people to say, this guy or this woman is responding to these assaults, negative attacks, false attacks, and I believe this person. And I think that's very, very effective. Well, now to your point.
Well, you know what? Let me pick up on your point, because actually I want to give Governor Rendell a chance to respond to that. First of all, do you think Bernie Sanders is hurting your candidate, Hillary Clinton? And do you think she is a weak candidate because of her high negatives?
Well, I think on balance, the Democratic primary and caucus elections haven't been too rough. And there have been some things. I mean, we had that little spat about who's qualified and who's not qualified. And Bernie may have said some things there that, the Republicans could use against Hillary Clinton in the fall. But nothing compared to what the slew of Republican candidates, Marty, said about Donald Trump that we can use in the fall. So, in some ways, I think Hillary Clinton's going to be a better candidate in the fall because she was challenged by Bernie Sanders and challenged so hard and so well. So I don't accept the fact that he's done irretrievable damage to Hillary Clinton's candidacy. And as for her being a weak candidate, well, let me say two things. Number one, Hillary Clinton has not always been unpopular. When she was Secretary of State, she had a 70% favorable rating among the American people, number one. And number two, Hillary Clinton is very adept at debating. And in the presidential election, those three debates are intensely watched by the American people, I think. The first debate is usually watched by 80 million people, usually slightly more than actually vote, Marty. And I think Hillary Clinton, because of her knowledge and her experience, both in domestic and foreign policy and national security, will be a superb debater. And I think she'll just gain tremendous points over Donald Trump during those debates. So I think she'll turn out to be a very strong candidate. And that's not to say that Senator Sanders wouldn't. But Senator Sanders, I don't think it's fair to say that he's been vetted, not by negative ads at all. And, for example, the first negative ad out of the box, using Senator Sanders' own words, going to raise federal spending by 33%. That is not something that the American people are going to take well to. Second ad out of the box is he's going to raise several federal taxes. That's not an ad that the American people are going to take well to. And again, let me pledge here to you and to everyone that if Bernie Sanders somehow wrests the nomination, I will be for Bernie Sanders with every ounce of energy I have, because I think he's a good man, and more importantly, I think he's infinitely better towards achieving the goals that Hillary Clinton and I believe in than Donald Trump.
Well, let me reframe some of the questions I put to you, Jonathan Tessini, but also picking up on what the governor just said there. If the candidate does turn out to be Hillary Clinton, are you willing to support her? And do you think a lot of the very enthusiastic supporters of Bernie Sanders will be willing to support her when November or when the fall rolls around?
I think my personal thing is kind of irrelevant, but I do want to talk about the whole movement. And I think that that's a complicated question. And my simple answer is I think basically yes. And the answer to yes is, to echo what the governor said, the two words, Donald Trump. Yesterday, Donald Trump put out a list of, I believe it was a dozen potential Supreme Court nominees that he would be considering, and indicative of the kind of people he would put on the court. And I think all Democrats have to do is run a big banner with a picture of those potential picks and understand what's at stake here is potentially who will control the Supreme Court for the next several generations. And those kinds of people that Donald Trump would put in place, it would undo many of the rights that I think all Democrats have faced. And speaking as a labor activist, I know, for example, that that would be a fifth vote to destroy public unions throughout America. The famous Friedrich versus the California Teachers Association decision, which was essentially now at a 4-4 tie because of the death of Antonin Scalia. My guess is a Donald Trump nominee would side with the employers, with the anti-union people. That's a very fundamental question. So I think that that's going to be focused people's attention. That said, I do want to say that there, you know, I've been traveling the country now since September. I've been to dozens and dozens of cities and towns and talked to Bernie Sanders supporters everywhere, seen them active in big rallies and small gatherings. And I think the party needs to understand that there's a different situation that we're facing now. It's not as if we're now ending a primary contest between, say, Walter Mondale and Gary Hart, or Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, and people who, at least as the framework was set, basically supported a very similar approach. Many people really are for a political revolution, and they do see the party not adapting to that. They do want to have a different kinds of economics, and they don't see Hillary Clinton, frankly, representing that. So there is a segment. I can't tell you whether it's, you know, 5 people or 1,000 people or 1,000,000 people. There are a segment of people who are only going to want to support Bernie Sanders. Now, I do want to say,
well, and make it quickly, only because I want to give I'm sorry to do that.
Quickly. I just want to echo what the governor said. In 2008, we had a similar thing. We had a phenomenon called the Pumas.
I was just going to ask about that, yes.
Who basically said, we're not going to vote for Barack Obama. But it ended up being inconsequential, frankly, and a very small amount. And Barack Obama won an overwhelming victory. So just as an independent analyst, I'll just say, I don't think that will shift the general election dramatically.
Well, picking up on several things, to you, Governor Rendell, people who do support Hillary Clinton are concerned or worried that because Bernie Sanders is not a member of the Democratic Party the way Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton were 8 years ago, they're wondering about his loyalty to the party and whether he will bring his people along if, in the end, Hillary Clinton is the nominee. Do you share those worries?
Well, of course, in politics, you're always worried, Marty. But I think Bernie Sanders will be fine. And I'll tell you why.
I agree with you.
For two reasons. One, because Bernie cares very deeply about the issues that he started out campaigning on and that this revolution has been about. And he knows that Hillary Clinton is infinitely more likely to appoint Supreme Court justices that will get rid of Citizens United than Donald Trump. that Hillary Clinton's infinitely more likely to raise the minimum wage significantly than Donald Trump, and so on and so on and so on. So that's number one. And I think Bernie deeply believes in those issues, and he wants to effectuate them, and he knows that Hillary Clinton's by far the better choice. And number two, Bernie has been absolutely clear, even as he's fought hard, even as he's continued to contest the secretary, Bernie has been absolutely clear that he will do everything he can to defeat Donald Trump. In fact, I think his exact quote was, he'll knock his brains out, work 7 days a week to defeat Donald Trump.
About a minute before...
Go ahead, Jonathan.
About a minute before our break here, but go ahead.
Yeah. I'll try to do it in a minute. And the other thing to add is, Bernie has been a loyal, if you will, and regular participant in the Democratic caucus, both in the House and the United States Senate. And if by chance he's not the nominee, I think he knows that he's going to return to the United States Senate. And he sees the possibility with a strong Democratic wave of the Democrats recapturing the Senate. And at that point, he will be in line to be chair of the Banking Committee, the Budget Committee, something significant. He's now currently the ranking member of the Budget Committee, where he will have a big megaphone and ability to influence policies that he's now advocating for on the campaign trail.
Well, we are going to take that short break and then get back to our conversation. We're talking about the Democrats and the race that has stretched into the spring, and we'll go to June, the race between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. The voice you just heard is Jonathan Tessini. He's a political and labor strategist. He's a surrogate for Bernie Sanders and author of The Essential Bernie Sanders and His Vision for America. The other guest is Ed Randell, and he's a former two-term Pennsylvania governor and mayor. He's also news analyst for MSNBC. He's a superdelegate, former chairman of the DNC. 1-888-477-9499. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscoing. Coming up next, columnist Ron Fournier joins us to discuss his new book, Love That Boy. It's about his relationship with his son, Tyler, who has Asperger's syndrome. That's Radio Times at 11 on WHYY.
PNC Arts Alive and the Arts and Business Council of Greater Philadelphia support WHYY. On May 24th, the Arts and Business Council will honor those who support our region's arts, culture, and creative sector. For tickets, artsandbusinessphila.org.
Governor McCrory's gift.
I'm really looking forward to writing a letter to Pat thanking him for advancing transgender potential federal protections into the mainstream.
North Carolina's governor puts the trans community on the map, HB2's intent versus the effect. Next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Ballot Talks on Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscoing, talking with Governor Ed Randell and Jonathan Tessini. And let me get David from Flemington, New Jersey, to join us on the show. And David, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you, Marty. I believe, given the intense and what I think are unique passions for Bernie Sanders, that the bigger picture is that Mrs. Clinton is going to need every Sanders supporter to win the presidency. And the logical conclusion, I believe, is that she will need to choose him for her VP. I'd be interested in your guest comments. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. Governor Randell, what do you think of that?
Well, I don't think Bernie would want to be vice president. It's not in his personality, and I think he'd rather be in the Senate, and I think that's pretty clear.
What do you think, Jonathan?
I 100% agree with the governor, and I would add to that, for that reason, I also don't think that Elizabeth Warren will be the vice president pick. I think that she has a much more bigger leverage and bigger influence in her place in the Senate. That's just my uneducated guess.
Let me move ahead to the convention, which will be here in Philadelphia, and to you, Governor. We know from Bernie Sanders he supports single-payer health care, $15 minimum wage, free trade, free public college tuition, public universities, breaking up the banks. How much influence do you think he will have in Philadelphia, no matter what happens in the next couple of weeks?
Oh, I think the platform committee will reflect in great part the issues that Senator Sanders has raised. So, for example, $15 minimum wage, Bernie wants that to be federal. What Hillary Clinton says is she supports the bill that Patty Murray has put in to raise the federal minimum wage to $12, but that she would advocate and help as president of the states that wanted to go beyond the 15. So I think it would be easy for us to say that we advocate a $15 minimum wage for working Americans. So I think that'll be Citizens United. We platform will absolutely say that we're committed to either a constitutional amendment or appointing judges to the Supreme Court that will get rid of Citizens United. As to health care, Bernie and Hillary both share the goal of 100% access to health care for Americans. Whether that comes from single payer or what Hillary wants to do is expand the ACA, I think the platform can say our goal is to make sure that every American is covered by health care. So I think that a lot of the platform will reflect what Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton have agreed on, and in a way that I think will satisfy most of the Sanders supporters. It won't be exact. It won't be every issue. There'll be some differences, but I think Bernie will have tremendous influence at the convention at the platform committee.
Jonathan, does that sound like a revolution to you? I mean, this is the sort of pragmatics of politics.
Well, here, let me take the one that Ed, the governor, didn't mention, because I think there's enormous implications for the general election on this one and for the party, and that's on trade. And where I think there'll be a very, very fierce battle about this. Bernie Sanders has been against every so-called free trade agreement since NAFTA. Hillary Clinton has not, although she's flip-flopped a little bit on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And this is going to be a huge issue at the convention, and it's in part going to be an issue because in some way Bernie's position, it contradicts the President of the United States, Barack Obama. And the way the party resolves that, and I say this partly as someone who's worked very hard against these trade agreements going back to NAFTA, I think this is fundamental to us. And Donald Trump has been brilliant on seizing this. Now, whether he's done it for, electoral purposes, he doesn't really believe it. He has attacked NAFTA as one of the worst trade agreements that we've ever had, which is completely against the Republican Party orthodoxy. But it could have great consequences in states like Michigan, Ohio, and in the governors in your own state of Pennsylvania. And I think how we come out on the trade will both shape what the Democratic Party stands for and I think might influence the November election.
Governor Rendell, do you agree with that? And this seems, as Jonathan Tessini just said, appeals to a very strong segment, really, in both parties. We're seeing this is something that the Republicans voting for Bernie Sanders feel strongly about, trade.
Well, I want to correct Jonathan on one thing. Bernie Sanders is not against trade. He's not against free trade.
He's against free trade.
He's not against trade as long as the trade has the right protections for American workers and for the environment and things like that. So I think, again, you can provision that covers that view, because Secretary Clinton says the reason she's against TPP is it doesn't have the right protections for American workers and for the environment. So, again, I don't think there's a lot of space between where the candidates are on these issues. And Donald Trump has been clever, but, he's against free trade agreements, and then the next week he's for them.
Let me read a couple of comments. I'm sorry, Jonathan, let me just jump in here. A tweet from Gene saying Governor Rendell just said what all Democrats need to say, that they will support the Democratic nominee regardless. An email from Nick. What arguments could Bernie Sanders make that would convince the superdelegates to vote for him at the convention? Jonathan, can I toss that to you? What is the argument?
Well, I do want to just quickly – I will say that argument, but I do want to say yes – Bernie Sanders has been against, as I said, all so-called free trade agreements going back to NAFTA. But the way in which we fix that is we tear those agreements up. We are all for trade, but not the NAFTA style. And those side agreements are kind of, this is a longer debate, but those never fix those trade agreements. So on the superdelegate question, there are many things we can make. One of them, I think, is the electability issue. And I think all the polls that are showing, that are coming out recently, show that Hillary Clinton is the weakest candidate of the two, and we discussed this early in the program, going up against Donald Trump. And I think as the contest wraps up in California, and then we have right through July, there'll be many more indicators of that. We will also see The Republican convention will have been finished, I believe, a week earlier.
Yes.
And so there'll be a chance for the delegates to look then at the map and at the state of play and make that decision based on who's the strongest candidate to defeat Donald Trump.
Governor, should we believe polls in May that predict things in November, especially this year, 2016?
I don't think so. And for the reason I stated, that Bernie hasn't been the subject of any real negatives. But it's sort of interesting. And I don't use the word hypocrisy because I understand politics and you have to make the argument that that the best argument you've got. But the Sanders folks, particularly the Sanders zealots, say the people should decide. The people should decide. The voters should decide. Well, they're going to ask superdelegates to vote for and nominate a candidate who got 3 million less popular votes, who got 200 to 300 less elected delegates. That doesn't seem like the spirit of their campaign to me.
Do you want to respond to that, Jonathan Tessini?
I'd only say, that's one argument, but the flip side argument is, do you want to live with a Supreme Court justice who will decide things for the next several generations that will undo every single thing Democrats want to stand for? And if you don't, then do you want to run the risk with an extremely damaged candidate? And I don't disagree.
Jonathan, you've had the chance to make, I don't mean you personally, but the Sanders folks have had the chance to make that to the voters. And the voters in Pennsylvania decided by a margin of 12% that notwithstanding that argument, they wanted Hillary Clinton.
Let me get some calls.
That's a fair argument that you guys can make in response. I don't disagree. There's a legitimate argument both ways, and we'll see how that all sifts itself out.
Indeed. Let me get Robin from Pensacon to join us. And Robin, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I've just moved to the area after being gone for 45 years. And I'm just very concerned that Sanders has done absolutely nothing to help the down ballot candidates in any state. And if he is the nominee, and if he is the president, in January, then how has he affected the change in the Senate or the House? He's not using what he should be doing.
Well, Robin, let me put that to Jonathan Tessini and to Governor Rendell. Jonathan, go ahead.
Well, the first thing I say is it's not true. He actually has sent out an email for a candidate named Lucy Flores, for Zephyr Teachout, who's running in New York, who's challenging a Republican. They raised, each of them, I believe, about $500,000 each from that email. He did others. And the fact is that he is just remember, he doesn't have super PACs. He doesn't have Wall Street money coming in to fund super PACs. He's trying to fund his campaign to make the convention be the nominee. There's no doubt in my mind, because of the way Bernie speaks about building the Democratic Party in all 50 states, it's in some way the Howard Dean strategy, that he will, in fact, try to raise money and campaign for people, because he does, if he wants to implement the political revolution, there's no doubt that we have to flip the Senate and certainly try to change the House, which I think is a tougher hill to climb.
Robin, thanks for the call. Governor, anything you want to add to that?
Well, I think he hasn't done much of it this year, but I think he will if he's the nominee. But I also think that the caller should be reminded that Bernie Sanders has participated in a number of these retreats where the Senate Democrats have brought big givers up to places like Martha's Vineyard or Nantucket, and has helped persuade big givers to give money to the Democratic Senate Campaign Committee. Ironically, some of those big givers, Marty, you know where they come from?
Where?
Wall Street.
Well, that's interesting. This is 2016 politics. Let me read an email from Karen. She says, it's interesting that the Democratic debates and town halls stopped as Sanders' popularity increased. Governor, I'm going to toss that to you. There is concern, and you used to head up the DNC, that the DNC is essentially, in it for Hillary Clinton and not so much for Bernie Sanders.
Well, if that were the case, they would have scheduled a lot more debates because, again, if you believe impartial media analysts, Hillary wins most of the debates. She certainly, I think, crushed in the Brooklyn debate, and that was shown in the New York the election results, where Hillary Clinton won by 16 points, notwithstanding all those big crowds that Bernie was getting.
Let me get Andy. Andy has a question for you, Jonathan. This is Andy from Yardley. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Do we have Andy? Nope. A question for you, Jonathan. How does Bernie Sanders plan to implement his liberal policies when there are so many Tea Party conservatives voting? There are questions about this idea of revolution and then the kind of hard-nosed pragmatics of politics. Can you speak to that?
And I think the question mentioned concerns me in the Democratic Party. Is that?
Well, Tea Party, however, I mean, they're conservatives obviously in both parties, but the fact that there is a strong conservative strain.
And I think that's a legitimate question. I think that's, by the way, a question that both Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders would face as president. It's one reason I mentioned that we're hopeful to flip the Senate back to the Democrats. But look, there's going to be huge opposition on the part of Republicans. I do think, as Donald Trump being the nominee, we have a slightly better chance of recapturing House, but I think it's a big hill to climb given the redistricting and what a big margin they have. But look, this is why Bernie calls for a political revolution. He doesn't think that's going to happen on January 20th, 2017, after he's sworn in. It will take time. But if the person was referring to the Democratic Party, he or she is absolutely right. There will be, first of all, struggle within the Democratic Party to accept many of the things, single-payer opposition to so-called free trade and other issues. But I do think, generally speaking, both Democrats are going to face opposition that we're going to have to overcome.
To you, Governor, there are calls now, and certainly the last time we had a convention in Philadelphia, the Republicans in 2000, there were protests, and there will be protests this year as well. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I have great confidence in the Philadelphia police, especially the Civil Affairs Unit, which, as you know, Marty, has been in existence since Frank Rizzo's days. They do a very good job in handling protesters and demonstrators, basically by giving them access to demonstrate. And we want demonstrators. We believe in the First Amendment, and we want demonstrators the right to peacefully demonstrate, to say anything they want, to have any signs they want. And I think they'll have very good access so that they'll be able to get their point across to delegates, to point across to elected officials. So I think the Philadelphia police will do a very good job outside the building. Inside the building, I think we depend on leadership. And I don't mean just Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, but the people who head each delegation to make sure that everybody respects each other, and I think that's important.
When you talk about access, there's always this question about sort of how close can protesters get to the actual convention, which will be in South Philadelphia. And there were criticisms in 2000 that protesters felt they were kept away from the actual convention.
Well, there's a secure area, and the Secret Service decides what's a secure area. We don't. The Democratic Party doesn't. The host committee doesn't. And they will have access right outside the secure area. I can guarantee you that. And, again, they may not have had great access to the delegates, but they sure had great access to the media.
Yes, they did.
Because I remember seeing them on TV every night and seeing them in the newspapers every morning.
Jonathan, I'm giving you the last word about 30 seconds before we have to say goodbye. Any final words for your candidate, Bernie Sanders?
I think Bernie has contributed an enormous amount to defining what the Democratic Party is going to look like. And actually, I'm quite enthusiastic and optimistic because I think this political revolution has just started. It's going to go way past this election. I think it's going to reshape the Democratic Party.
Well, we're going to leave it on that note. Jonathan Tessini, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
My pleasure.
And he's a political and labor strategist. He's a surrogate for Bernie Sanders, wrote a book called The Essential Bernie Sanders and His Vision for America. Governor Rendell, thank you for joining us as well.
My pleasure.
And, of course, former governor of Pennsylvania, former mayor of Philadelphia. He's a news analyst for NBC, special counsel for Ballard Spahr. That's a law firm here in Philadelphia. He's also a superdelegate and former chairman of the DNC. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about the program. You can send us an email, check us out on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thanks for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times for Ballot Talks on Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back with Hour 2.